nació el UFW en toda su gloria, y el resto del texto está escrito en la historia.
I remember when we first started the union, Pete Farmer would say to me, let's do this for our children. And I think to myself, but why are they saying for our children?
Dolores no teme porque es muy valiente.
Because even they knew better than I did, you know, how what a long struggle it was going to be. And now I see their children, you know, that are now involved in the struggle, like Luciano Crespo today, who organized transportation. Well, his mother was a striker, you know, well, he was just a little kid then. Now Luciano is, you know, being able to be a leader in the union, and some of the young people. And it's true, you know, here we are, basically we're here in Delano, we're at the same place that we were in 1965, you know. We have a different way to do it. We're doing it through elections and through the ALRB instead of the strike, say, and the boycott. But still we have to use part of the boycott. And they were right when they said, let's do it for our children. Let's make these sacrifices for our children. They knew what they were talking about.
Dolores no teme porque es muy valiente.
They, them, they are somebody other. They are not us. They are always somebody other. They are without regard. We do not see them. Their struggle is not ours. They are invisible. They harvest the food. They cultivate the land. They are figures toiling picturesquely as cars speed by on the overpass. As decorative upon the landscape as a flock of marsh birds, they wade among the produce in the fields. They decorate the landscape. No more. No matter that they have children, as they are not us, they are not like us. And as their children are not our children, their children are not like ours. Hunger is their chief possession, not a privation. Cold is the habitat of them, not a deprivation. That they must be fed, that they must be warm, that they must have shelter and care and be free from harm, this is a surprise to those who are forced to hear for the first time that they are indeed us, that their children are indeed our children, their struggle our struggle. Who will tell this tale? Whisper in our ear, shout and ring the alarm bell. Who will lead us in this revolutionary awakening? History teaches us that it will not be the first revolution led by a woman, herself the universal other. Hi, I'm Haunani Singer from Pacifica Radio Archives. This week's From the Vault pays tribute to the life's work of Dolores Huerta, co-founder of the United Farm Workers. It was she who awakened the sleeping giant of American food production and gave a human voice to the anonymous and all too often expendable workers in the fields. For these workers in their time and their children in times to come, she has devoted her life to the premise that they who labor in the sweltering heat and bitter cold might find a place in the sun and a shelter from the storm for themselves and their children. From Pacifica Radio Archives, then, From the Vault, Dolores Huerta, For Our Children.
Qué bien te queda tu nombre, Dolores. Porque Dios sabía que tú sufrirías muchos sinsabores. Y el nombre de Huerta también lo traías, porque en esas huertas comenzó la lucha por cual.
She is the Vice President of the United Farm Workers Union. Dolores Huerta, welcome to WBAI.
Thank you.
Perhaps we should just start by giving our listeners a sense of how you got involved in the United Farm Workers Union, and perhaps some of the past victories and some of the present struggles.
Well, I started, I'm one of the founding members of our union, and started way back in the 50s and the 60s when we saw that there was a need for farm workers to be organized. We've, you know, come a long way from the time when we had no kind of legislation to.
The grape strike in Coachella, In the early morning hours of April 16, 1973, the United Farm Workers Union struck all but two grape growers in the Coachella Valley. The strike came as a result of an announcement the day before by the Teamsters Union of a four-year contract with growers covering 85% of the valley's farm workers. William Kircher, National Director of Organizations for the AFL-CIO, and President George Meany's personal representative to the grape strike, offers a different explanation for the presence of the Teamsters.
Growers are more comfortable with a union like the Teamsters. You see, if a grower has a contract with a farm workers union, then those workers are represented by their own leadership. And if there's a grievance or a complaint, the grower has to sit down across the table from a farm worker. And that's not pleasant for him. It's a little uncomfortable for that grower. He likes it a lot better if there's a problem to pick up the phone and have the Teamster business agent drive over to the country club in his T-Bird, and the grower drives up to the country club in his Cadillac, and they sit there over martinis and decide how to deal with his particular grievance. You know, it's the Teamsters Union's a comfortable union for the employer. The indigenously led Farm Workers Union is not a comfortable union because the collective bargaining process is an adversary process, and when both parties come at it with full honor and honesty, there's a certain amount of discomfort and strife involved for both parties.
Well, it's something like the economics of racism, you know. You know, it's basically that there's a lot of that in that. I mean, they were willing to, say, sign contracts with the Teamsters, pay money into a Teamster pension plan that they knew was totally corrupt, right? Didn't hurt them a bit. You know, pay a lot of money, say, to labor contractors, as long as the workers can be kept, you know, oppressed. See? So it's not the money of it, I think, that really... it's just the fact of... They will not accept workers as their equals.
People have got to understand what the labor movement is, what it's done, and look at the history and what it's doing now, because it is only labor that is out there daily, you know, fighting for wages, fighting for benefits, redistributing the wealth. It's the only redistribution program that we have in the whole country, and it's, you know, men and women that are working day and night in the labor movement to make it happen. And people forget that. We seem to take labor for granted, not realizing that we are here in the heart of the lion, you might say, the mouth of the lion, you know, the bed of capitalism, the corporate wealth and power. And to think that our labor movement has survived, like the farm worker story, is kind of a miracle in itself.
Compañeros, entonces, con mucho gusto, al compañero director Jerry Whipple.
It is a great pleasure to be with our friends, the farm workers, today. And I want to say to you that the UAW, on behalf of the officers and the members of the UAW, are with you. And we're going to be with you not in words, but in money and help in every way possible. Thank you very much.
Vino a California y salió profesora. Enseñaba a niños de los campesinos. Venían a la clase con hambre y con frío. Le partían el alma y Dolores dijo: si ayudo a los padres, ayudo a los hijos. Y esta señora de gran corazón, así comenzó la primera unión.
I think that we have to remember that the struggle will be constant, okay? We're now asking people to boycott Andy Boy Broccoli, and maybe next week we'll be asking you to boycott Del Monte
not only, excuse me, Dole pineapples, right, because we're having trouble with them on the contract on the West Coast. And it's a constant thing. That's the only thing I can say. It's a constant struggle. It's a constant vigil. It's a constant activism. I think that the saying in Spanish says the devil never sleeps. El diablo nunca duerme, you know. He's always awake. And this is something like the corporations, right? They're always working. They're always working. And so we also have to do the same thing. We're going to be coming back asking people for help all the time. I'm sure of it now. You know, this is my fourth time back in New York saying, help us boycott something. And we just, it's just part of our living. And we just have to remember that. I think the 80s hopefully will be like the 60s where people will realize it. But then we can't rest. When it's over, we have to keep on working.
Since the early 1960s, the United Farmworkers Union has been a fast-growing force in American agriculture, especially in California. But today, after more than 10 years of successful work across the country, the union is still struggling in its hometown, Delano. A handful of large growers there have consistently refused to sign contracts with the UFW, and so the union is now redirecting its boycott campaign against these ranches. During the meetings at 40 Acres, it was made clear that the Delano growers will go to great lengths to avoid signing a contract with the UFW. And workers gave example after example of how their union involvement brought on company discrimination, harassment, and intimidation.
The Delano growers, incredible as it may sound, after 10 years of struggle, have not made peace yet. I mean, they have not accepted unionization yet.
Dolores Huerta, first vice president of the UFW.
They also make life very miserable for the union workers, you know, like the people who are elected to the negotiating committees, you know, by harassing them and, you know, just putting a lot of pressure on them, as in the case with Atilano Rivera, who was a worker for Texcal. And he had no problems at all with the company until he was elected to the negotiating committee. Immediately after that, they took him off of his tractor job. They put him on a hoe, you know, hoeing. And then they put him out there in a very isolated place where he couldn't communicate with any other workers in all this big, tall Johnson grass. It's just a very bad situation. And then they further went on to harass him. He lives on company housing. So somehow one morning he got up and his garden was destroyed. You know, he had his little plants planted and everything was torn down and destroyed. Then a couple of weeks ago, they came out and they shot up all of his pigeons. You know, he has about 100 pigeons, and they killed 80 of his pigeons, just shot them. You know, and here he has his kids at home and his wife, and they wake up and they hear gunshots about 7 o'clock in the morning, and somebody's there killing all of his pigeons. It turned out it was one of the company's supervisors and one of his friends. But just all this incredible harassment. Oh, just yesterday he got the notice that he's got to move out of his house. And they put a notice on it, and the company says that he has to leave.
Hear the rooster as he wakes everyone with his in the morning, and the chickens scratch around on the ground, but there isn't a worm to be found. Baby chickies all sing pio 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 pio. And the sounds of the fields and the farms, lovely colors abound as the sunshine peeks through.
And so, you know, this harassment just goes on and on and on.
How do you fight back against it?
Well, the way we're fighting back now is through the ALRB. We can file unfair labor practice charges against the company. And Ms. Dactilo's case is right now before the Agricultural Labor Relations Board. They've been in hearings now for weeks. And this is another thing. What we're asking for is for the company to give Mr. Atilano Rivera back his tractor job, take him off the hoe, give him back his job driving tractor. He's worked at the company since 1967, you know, and they don't want to give him back his job on the tractor. But they're willing to spend $1,000 a day for an ALRB hearing, because that's about what they have to pay their attorneys, say between $500 and $1,000 a day, and go on these lengthy hearings rather than give the workers the money and give him his back wages that they should give him, you know. They will not accept workers as their equals. That's a big part of it. That's why you have to look at their mentality, which is a feudalistic mentality where they look down on their, or a bigoted mentality, and they won't accept workers as equals. And when you hear people like Nagy and Atilano Rivera and, you know, all the workers, they're such humble people and such good people. And you wonder, how can the growers hate them, you know? How can they be so blind as to hate their own workers? The workers that have literally made them rich, because Louis Carrington is a millionaire. And the Filipino workers made the growers in Delano millionaires. And yet they have to live in hovels now that they're retired, you know? It's incredible, but they can't relate to their workers at all. They just see them as tools of production, as instruments. I mean, they have more feelings for their caterpillars than they do for their workers.
I like the union. Or else, if we don't have the union, we don't have this kind of wages now. We lost only $1.40 an hour. We were receiving $1.20. We only asked $1.40. They said, sorry, we cannot afford. It takes us 5 years before they sign. They started $1.40, but they won't sign. And then $1.60, they won't sign. They give us $1.80. And then very soon they sign. Yeah, because of the boycott. Or else the picket line don't work. Because you know how poor people like us, especially those that have family. So they have to go to work for 2 days or 3 days. Then they got no food if they do go to, they go, don't go to work. That's why the picket line don't work. So it's the boycott that saved the union.
Fred said you were supposed to be a company man.
Yeah, oh yeah. Because I was a foreman for more than 20 years.
A foreman for 20 years?
Yes, sir.
And you left that for the union?
Yeah. I was receiving that much, 7,000 to 8,000. Yet my men, they are only good for 2,000, 3,000. See? So I want to help too. That's why I woke up. I woke up twice. See, when they signed 1970. They took me back. In fact, every year they want me back. But I won't go, unless they sign. So when they signed in 1970, I went back. 1973, when their contract expired, I strike again, until now. I'm not still staying here. You know, I have a house in Early Mark. But many of my men are here, and I got nothing to do anyway. So I come here and play cards with them, just to pass the time.
I'm too one of them. My age, I'm retired in my age, but I'm not going to be retired in this movement. I got to go on. We thank you, people, to come and see us here and give us more courage, even though we are old already, but we will build up our courage to go on and do something, even though we cannot get out in the boycott area anymore.
I must ask one other question. Unfortunately, there are not nearly enough women labor leaders. There are women labor activists, but they haven't graduated to positions of leadership within their unions. Some of that is a result of tremendous chauvinism. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how you feel. You did mention that the president of National Organization of Women is addressing the AFL-CIO convention today. Do you think there will be more women? How do you view that struggle?
I think that we have to do it. I mean, women have to do it. We cannot expect somebody to open the door for us. We really have to organize ourselves and make it happen. And men, or, you know, it's hard for them to give up power. I think it's hard for anybody to give up power. And I think women, we don't like to think in those terms. It seems kind of distasteful and nasty for us to think in terms of power games. I find it, for myself, very distasteful, but I also realize that women are the majority in many unions. But it's somehow we think there's something wrong with us trying to be the leader, and we're not. We have so much to give and so much to offer, and God knows it would be a better place if there were more women in leadership positions. And I think we have to look at it as an obligation, even if it means, you know, giving the time up that you could spend with the kids and your husband or in your home or whatever. It's an obligation for us. If we're going to make this a better world, women have got to take a much greater role. And it's painful. And I can say that as myself. It's been very painful for me. And I've had to give up a lot of things that I like or would like to do with my time. But it's a social responsibility that we have. But we can't wait for anybody to give it to us. We've got to get in there and organize it and make it happen ourselves.
I have the honor of introducing our very special guest this evening. My name is Miguel Contreras, and I'm the Secretary Treasurer of the Los Angeles County Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO. I head the labor movement here in Los Angeles County. But my career in the labor movement actually started 24 years ago in April 1973. I'm born and raised in a small San Joaquin town called Dinuba, California. And I was proud to be here as Sons of Farm Workers and a former farm worker myself, a former member of United Farm Workers Union. In 1973, our grape contracts expired. My father, my five brothers, and myself worked for one grower, one particular grower, Hamilton in the Valley. Our contracts were expiring 24 years ago, and the growers up and down the state of California had no intentions of renegotiating the contracts that gave farm workers dignity and respect. The contracts that Dolores and Caesar negotiated on our behalf that called for such basics as toilets in the fields, water for the workers, the first ever medical plan for the farm workers, but more importantly, making sure that the farm workers had a voice on the job. But I remember very well, on April 14th, 1973, at 5 o'clock in the morning, that pickups drove up to our house in Dinuba, and I remember well the glare from the pickup lights coming into our porch. 5 o'clock in the morning, I remember the supervisors and the crew bosses coming to see my father, who was the head of the United Farm Workers Ranch Committee. And my father and my five brothers all were out in the front of the porch, and I remember the supervisor telling my father that, he said, Julio, you're the best worker we ever had working for us, that you worked for us for 24 years, but we have to let you go, you and your entire family. He says, we cannot afford to have any more Chavistas working for us. And with that's all my father had after 24 years of work for the same grower, that we got fired and put on a blacklist. But they didn't have to fire us because the next day our contract expired and we would have walked out on strike anyway, when we did. And it was a long strike, and I'm sure you'll see some in the video. But I remember what Caesar and Dolores taught us all those years. Taught us about self-worth, that you're somebody. Taught us about fighting for respect and fighting for dignity and how to fight for justice.
The means are greater than the end in our case. You know, building the movement and organizing is even greater than the contracts that we get. I mean, and then, you know, getting the contracts is just to make those farm workers stronger, you know, to help them get other farm workers, to help other farm workers. So I think it's a very fantastic, big, giant movement that we have. I think it's even bigger than we could comprehend. When you bring in not only, you know, supporters in California, but people in all other states, you know, that support us. It's really a big movement. If we could computerize all of the people that support the Farm Workers Union, we'd probably come up with a fantastic number of people.
But I've never publicly thanked her for recruiting me into this cause that I call my life. And please welcome the co-founder of United Farm Workers, once again, La Hermana Dolores Huerta.
Thank you. This is really history tonight, you know. The first Latino president of the Central Labor Council of Los Angeles, Miguel Contreras. All right. How about that? Thank you, Miguel. This is a really, really a wonderful evening tonight. And Raza, we're making history tonight. We are making history tonight, let me tell you. We have with us Lalo Guerrero, this wonderful, great man who, that song that he wrote was like the first song that anyone had written about the strike. And this was in the days when, as you'll see in the film, where people were saying we were a bunch of crazy communists, right? And many organizations did not support us. And to have Lalo here tonight and then to give me this precious gift of a song is really great. And we're all here together tonight to celebrate the life of Cesar. The best tribute that we can give to Caesar is to be with him in his work, to continue the work that Cesar started. You know that Cesar's work against pesticides was extremely important. Cesar fasted for 36 days without any food, with just Holy Communion and water, because so many farm worker children were dying in McFarland and Early Martin and Delano of the cancers from the pesticides. He raised the consciousness of the American public so that they would be aware of the pesticides. And when he started it, a lot of people said he was crazy, it smokes and mirrors, he doesn't know what he's doing, you know, he's gone off again, he's kind of cooked in the head. But Cesar knew what he was doing because he knew that it wouldn't do any good for farmers to get $20 an hour and to die of cancer from pesticides.
I remember when we first started the union, Cesar talked to me that he was going to start a union. He said, I only have one worry. Well, he said two worries. And I asked him what they were. He said, one is that we won't have enough money. The other one is that I won't have enough time, that I'll die before it's completed. And I thought to myself, wow, because at that time, that was back in 19, when he made the official decision to start the union, was in 62. You know, I guess Caesar was how old then, 32 years old? And sure enough, I guess he was about 34 years old. You know, we're running out of time. You know, because we're probably, you know, all in our, going into our 50s now, and we haven't completed the job yet. But the farm workers had said, well, we're going to do it for our children. They knew what they were talking about.
Que viva la causa, hombres y mujeres. Aquí hemos venido a rendirle honores. Qué bien te queda tu nombre, Dolores, por coincidencia rima con colores.
You've been listening to From the Vault, an original Pacifica Radio Archives production created by Brian DeShazer and Christopher Sprinkle. From the Vault is broadcast throughout the Pacifica Radio Network with over 110 stations and affiliates. This program was produced by Haunani Singer. We are now streaming and podcasting online at fromthevaultradio.org. From the Vault is presented as part of the Pacifica Radio Archives Preservation and Access Project, which is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment of the Arts and grants from the Grammy Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the University of California's Moffitt Library, and the Pacifica Foundation, and from contributions from Pacifica Station listeners. Our theme music is by Kevin Drum Holiday. Thanks for listening.